From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
M. Michael Oski filed a federal lawsuit today against me and my chief of staff, Kyle Hamm. I strongly deny any inappropriate conduct. I think it's all politics. This is about Rutherford not being able to get the chance to be the nomination. I believe I stand between Bruce Rauner and the nomination.
Treasurer Rutherford, are there any more allegations of sexual harassment coming at you from anyone else?
Senator Dillard, I believe that was inappropriate.
The allegations of sexual harassment against an employee, Dog State Treasurer and gubernatorial candidate Dan Rutherford, as a federal lawsuit is filed this week against him on that subject, and also for allegedly coercing the employee to do campaign work on state time. Rutherford's campaign also saying this week they won't release the results of an internal investigation because there is this federal lawsuit. We'll be talking about that and more on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS Illinois Public Radio, WUIS IPR State House Reporter Brian Mackey, and our guest Mike Riopel, Political Editor for the Daily Herald out of Arlington Heights. And Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
And we'll start with you. You've been doing some research. These allegations have been swirling out there. A lawsuit was filed this week. If you could bring us up to speed on that, and then talk a little bit about what you know about the accuser in this case.
So the week started with a federal lawsuit from former Treasurer employee Ed Michalowski accusing his old boss, Dan Rutherford, of various types of sexual harassment and also making him do campaign work for 2012 presidential candidate Mitt Romney. Right after the lawsuit was filed, Rutherford had a news conference to strongly deny all of it, provide text messages and travel vouchers to try and show that he thought these things weren't true. And then, of course, the week has ended with Rutherford saying that he won't be releasing an independent investigation he had called for originally because as part of this federal lawsuit, he thinks that information should only be released to the court and shouldn't be talked about outside of court.
An investigation, mind you, that was paid for by taxpayers.
That's right. And when he first brought up these allegations, he was the first one who let us know about them, didn't say what they were or who they were from. But that was a big part of his initial news conference. I'm launching an independent investigation. We'll get to the bottom of this, etc. Now we will not know for quite a while, probably not until after the primary election, what the results of that investigation were.
And when we did this initial one, he fast-tracked it. He said, we're going to have this out like by today. And just as we approach that deadline, all of a sudden that information isn't available, which has to raise the questions among many. What's in this report? What did their own internal investigation turn up that might be damning for him?
Well, and that's the one of the problems here is that it just leaves us to speculate and voters out there to speculate about what might be in it. And this is one of those decisions that legally you can see where it's defensible. Sure, if you're a lawyer advising Mr. Rutherford about how to best to defend a federal case, sure, you probably don't want to put a bunch of information out there in the public. On the other hand, as was pointed out, this was paid for with tax dollars. And politically, it looks terrible because it looks like you're doing a cover up.
And it therefore hurts him. I know there had been some that thought, you know, maybe this story will end because at this point it is a trusted treasurer who's been in political office for decades versus an individual who, you know, Mike can speak to some of his reporting. But when after the lawsuit, Treasurer Rutherford held a press conference immediately that did raise some questions about the kind of the veracity of this lawsuit. For example, there is an allegation that Ed Michalowski was at the treasurer's home, and but it was there that the treasurer, he alleges, made advances. He had been sleeping over at the treasurer's house, which is kind of an odd thing. Doesn't happen very often. The treasurer came back and showed travel vouchers that showed on that date that his former employee submitted that he'd returned, in fact, to Chicago. And so was not actually in Chenoa. Again, there's so much he said, he said at this point in time. The employee has in interviews said that he was pressured to do that because that way he wouldn't need to get any sort of reimbursement for staying over for that long of a time. And that was why the travel vouchers don't match up with the accusations in the lawsuit he has filed. But in terms of that, there's so much that maybe it could have just been left at that point until the primary race where we don't know the answers, but this independent investigation was supposed to, supposedly, according to Rutherford, prove that he was right. And again, not only does it disclose it, but I think that just the question keeps on lingering that anybody who had been perhaps siding with the treasurer or waiting and taking his side will be wary to do so now.
Well, it occurs to me as a practical matter, Treasurer Rutherford's hopes to be governor are virtually dead at mm-hmm. this point.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, it's one thing if Charlie Wheeler, private citizen, gets sued and I talk to people and I have my private eyes out there doing investigating and my lawyer says, well, don't tell anybody about it. That's fine. Charlie Wheeler is not running for the Republican nomination for governor. And the treasurer has said, we're going to do this investigation and it's going to clear me and I'll share it with you. Now, all of a sudden, his lawyer says, well, we can't because we have a court proceeding coming up. If I were the treasurer and the report did in fact clear me, I'd tell my lawyer, I'm more concerned about the primary at this point than I am about winning the court suit. And if, in fact, the facts show that I am blameless, I'll win that suit. It doesn't matter when I show, you know, my hand. Mm-hmm. And so the only conclusion, the reasonable conclusion that I think a lot of people, probably myself included, come to is that there is something there that would be damaging, and it would be so damaging that Rutherford is willing to gamble that people are going to accept this notion that, oh, because it's a lawsuit, we can't talk about the results that clear me. I don't think people are going to buy that.
I think it gets back to the clip that we heard in the beginning, whereas you heard applause when the treasurer said that Senator Dillard's question was inappropriate. I think that's the question on a lot of people's minds, that people may take umbrage with the exact wording that Senator Dillard used during that debate and asking, is there going to be any more? Will the shoe drop lower? Will there be more shoes? But instead, that's the question that people have been raising. And the treasurer then saying, you know, no, and I think that that's an inappropriate question, when that is the big question. If Rutherford were to be the nominee, what more could come out at this point in time? And will there be additional individuals that take party to this lawsuit or perhaps any other sort of lawsuit against the treasurer on either sexual harassment allegations or the political coercion aspect? And there has been a lot of talk that there could be more of that. One needs to consider, I think, or looking at those employees as they decide if they want to, if there are in fact employees that are looking to do that, if they're going to sign on. Look at what has happened to Ed Michalowski at this point in time. He's become a public figure in his own right, in a sense. And so could they be as well? What about their own political futures? In terms of political coercion, it appears as if, obviously there are illegal aspects, don't do political work on state time, but I think oftentimes you have politicians all over the place that get very close to that line. And so for state workers to take part in a lawsuit that alleges that, other politicians may be wary to hire them on in the future because that is very much still kind of a habit in Illinois.
As one aside, I do have to say it's always – it seems like it's only in Illinois. You could be somebody working for a Republican treasurer and sue him, and then you land up on a Democratic Cook County payroll the next day. That is so Illinois. Mike,
well, and I think it's If I could just interrupt there, because I think we should ask Mike. Mike did a lot of great reporting on this week. And the way you laid it out, sure, you want to sue the treasurer and then you land on the payroll the next day. But that's actually not how the timing here worked out, as Mike reported. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's one of the many twists and turns of this thing. Ed Michalowski, the accuser, first worked for Secretary of State Jesse White, a Democrat from 1999 up into 2011, then joined Rutherford's office. And then one of the many coincidences is the same day he files a federal lawsuit, the same day that it was supposed to be his last day working for the treasurer's office, he started his new job with the Cook County Recorder of Deeds, Karen Yarbrough. An interesting coincidence. So he had actually applied for that job first back in August. And in December, he applied for a different job in August. In December, he was offered the job as a labor attorney, which I think is interesting because there's a workplace harassment lawsuit. He's been hired as a labor attorney in December. Then in January, his attorney first contacts Treasurer Rutherford's office, which sets off the whole timeline that we're all aware of. So it was just interesting. December offered a job. January, decide to approach your current employer with allegations. And then February, you start your new job with a Democrat.
Well, and further along that timeline, the allegations described in the lawsuit, both on the sexual harassment side and the being forced to do political work, some of it wasn't necessarily just that it was on state time, that it was, however, in general, forced to do political work or face perhaps being fired or any other sort of negative results on the government side of things. But those date back as far as 2011. And so even while this individual was, you know, applying for a new job and what have you, and whatever spurred him to finally take action, see a lawyer, file a lawsuit, the allegations that are described go back years.
And clearly, Michalowski has known Rutherford a long time. Rutherford describes him as a friend for 15 years. We don't even have to take his word for that. Michalowski gave Rutherford $300 in campaign money back in 1999 when Rutherford was still a relatively unknown Central Illinois state senator. So clearly they knew each other, at least going back that far. Then when Rutherford is elected, he gets hired on into that office.
You know, one of the things I think is worth talking about here that Amanda was kind of touching on earlier is about this question of political work. I think there are certain jobs in state government you take and you expect that, yes, eventually you will like leave the government job and do campaign work. I think if you're a legislative staffer, you want to go work for the House Democrats or Senate Republicans or something like that. I think part of the deal is you would like to do campaign work. That's why people get into that kind of thing. So, yeah, maybe you're a staffer on communications or policy or something like that during a non-election year. And then when the election time rolls around, you leave the state payroll and go work for campaigns. But I think one of the other interesting aspects we're seeing here is these jobs that maybe are not ostensibly, you know, you wouldn't think of them necessarily as being as political or requiring that kind of political work. And I think some of the allegations we're hearing about here are that, you know, there is still pressure to do fundraising. You know, there is this, and whether it's spoken or unspoken or subtle or overt, you know, put on that T-shirt, show up at the state fair parade and throw out candy next to your person's float. And I think that's something that is, you know, pretty pervasive in Illinois, although it's maybe gone underground given all the people who've gone to prison for stuff like that in recent years.
Well, one thing that maybe is a point of distinction here is that my understanding that Mr. Michalowski had a position that was Rutan exempt, and the Rutan Supreme Court decision of some years ago said in essence that your status as an employee, your promotions, your hiring, your conditions of employment can't be conditioned on you doing political work. But if someone is brought into a position that is non-Rutan, wouldn't the expectation be that you would do political work on the side? Not on state time now, but on your own time. Isn't that part of the understanding? If I get hired to be, I don't know, the governor's press secretary, which is a Rutan exempt position, I'd be expected to campaign for the governor.
Well, then the question is, should this job be classified as Rutan exempt, though? I mean, Amanda can say better what he was doing for the treasurer's law. I think it was communications work.
And marketing,
marketing.
But at a certain level in all the agencies, people who are considered to be policymakers or help shape policy are Rutan exempt. The theory being that if I'm elected, I don't know, Secretary of State, I want to be able to bring in people that I trust at the top level to run things for me rather than have to inherit the people who were there from my predecessor who I defeated in a very bitter campaign.
No, and you're right. And those individuals are individuals that are hired because of their close relationship with the constitutional officer or the leader, for example, and in a sense, whose own careers depend on that. You know, I mean, if the treasurer in this case loses the governorship, the people who were his top aides and staff are likely to face their own job, you know, issues when he's out of office and no longer needs to have all of those people as top aides because whoever wins has his own that he'll bring on. So there is that question. I will say that this lawsuit very much does allege, however, that whereas some of the employee was outside political activity, it very much alleges that he was – Ed Michalowski says that he was asked to engage in outside political activity, both for Rutherford and also because Rutherford was head of the Romney campaign in Illinois for Mitt Romney when he was making his presidential bid during working hours.
Yeah, and that, of course, is illegal. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to State Week in Review. We'll talk about some of the other candidates that are in this Republican race for governor coming up.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and the Daily Herald's Mike Riopel. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. At the beginning of the show, related to the Dan Rutherford controversy, we heard Senator Kirk Dillard, also running for governor, making the comment that the audience at that particular event did not really appreciate. Would there be any more allegations emerging, Dan Rutherford? And Rutherford kind of won that small audience that was there with his response that he didn't care for that type of comment. It didn't belong in this race. But that comment came out, and since that time, since Rutherford won't release the details of the investigation, a lot of that seems almost null and void. Whatever goodwill he might have had, he lost. But let's talk about Kirk.
Let me mention something, I guess kind of a historical tidbit. The fact that Dillard asked that question, maybe it wasn't appropriate in the venue, but it was the kind of question that Republican elder chieftains, if there are any, or whoever the head of the party is, should be asking. If for no other reason, think back a few years when the nominee for U.S. Senate was a guy named Jack Ryan, and there were all kinds of allegations swirling. Nobody knew what they were. And Jim Egger interviewed him and said, is there anything there that we have to be embarrassed about? And Ryan said, nope. And then the divorce files came out, and it turns out there were allegations that he had tried to entice his wife to go to some sex club or sex clubs in Hollywood. And at the time, I remember thinking to myself, well, maybe in Hollywood that's not embarrassing, but I'm sure Jim Egger would have raised his eyebrows at that one. and they imported a guy from the East Coast named Alan Keyes, who went on to lose spectacularly.
And Obama became president because he didn't have to fight a political fight.
So if I were a Republican, I would really – and again, there's really nobody in the party who has the authority, I guess, to sit down with these candidates and have a heart-to-heart and say, look, is there anything in your background that if it comes out, it's going to make us look bad or it's going to hurt you?
Well, and I think the polling has suggested that at least to this point, and we're still, a month away, a little more than a month away from the actual election, that Bruce Rauner is so far ahead and he has so much money and he's been willing to pour millions of his own dollars and has many, many wealthy friends who are pouring tens and in some cases hundreds of thousands of dollars into his campaign. I'm not sure that a lot of these Republican elders are that worried about Rutherford actually winning the nomination at this point. You know, if the polls are to be believed, you know, so far, and no shoes drop on the Rauner campaign, for example.
So well, and that's still a big unknown because the anti-Rauner folks have just started to gin up their campaign.
All you have to do is, well, he has a substantial lead. There, I think a lot of that, it can be soft, and you just, in a four-way race, you just have to move things a few points in one way. But Kirk Dillard is there making, trying to get some attention. He got some attention with that comment. And then he picks up the endorsement of the state's largest teachers union, the Illinois Education Association, on Friday. So does that give his campaign anything besides a moral boost?
Well, for one thing, one of Dillard's biggest problems has been his lack of campaign money. Rauner has pulled all the big donors, you know, most of the big donors out of the business community to his campaign, money he doesn't necessarily even need except for the fact that it takes away from the other candidates like Dillard. Now, the Illinois Education Association has a lot of campaign money and spends a lot of campaign money, one of the biggest donors, if not the biggest donor in Illinois. So if they're so inclined to follow that endorsement with campaign money, it could be the infusion that Dillard really needs. Now, there's about a month left. Dillard has a lot of ground to make up. So $100,000 won't do it. You know, if IEA is going to make a significant donation to Dillard and help him out in the cash front, it's got to be significant. It's got to be, you know, a lot.
And I think it presents several issues. So it, first of all, it's not just money, but it also could be bodies to go out and work and knock on doors and help out on campaign day and voters. The IEA, of course, has membership all over the place. So that helps him. And may it also be a sign that, okay, let's coalesce around a candidate besides Rauner. Maybe that would have been Rutherford, but due to the troubles that we've spent the show discussing, not anymore. Clearly, unions prefer Dillard to Brady for various reasons, including Dillard's vote against the pension overhaul, something that Brady casts as a selling point, his part in passing the new pension law. But may other unions who don't want Rauner to be Republicans' candidate begin to go in back Dillard after this? May there be kind of a waterfall there? It does put Dillard in a different position, however, because he needs to not just win, he needs to win the primary, of course, and there are already press releases from organizations that are more conservative, like Americans for Prosperity, that are angry that Dillard has and disappointed that Dillard has accepted this nomination, because they say, why is he aligning himself with a union, a group that wants, for example, that's opposed to school choice from their press release, opposed to homeschooling, wants a tax increase. So it is a deep infusion for Dillard potentially, and it may very much help him on all of those fronts, but it also may be a hit for him when it comes to the conservatives that he's been trying to woo.
But I would argue the flip side is if he has the bodies and now he has some money, mm-hmm. he can get forth his message that Bruce Rauner is a closet Democrat. He's a buddy with Rahm Emanuel. He's given money to Democrats, including Ed Rendell, to get pensions. He's got these ties to Stuart Levine. There's a lot of negative stuff that might resonate with your typical Republican primary voter if there is the money and the ground game to get it out there to potential voters.
And we should point out that so Thursday, the day before IEA announces its endorsement of Dillard, IEA, IFT, Illinois Federation of Teachers, and SEIU put $1.25 million on Thursday into the campaign fund that's buying anti-Rauner TV ads that are trying to tie him to the Blagojevich trial star witness Stu Levine. So clearly, those union leaders are involved, are sinking a ton of money into anti-Rauner advertising. But Amanda's right. If they then take that and focus it into one of the other three, that could be beneficial to Dillard if he's the guy.
Right, because it's not just – not taking the wins from Rauner. It's also needing for Dillard needing to get people behind him. I mean, it's a twofold need for him because we've seen Brady last time around kind of had a whole lot of the conservative support and the downstate support. And will Dillard be able to be kind of the runner up to that? And so it's not just him that's making the anti-Rauner message, but as Mike talked about, there's, you know, an effort from all of these unions, but there's a whole lot of outside money that we're really still trying to discover the details about flowing into this election, including ads that disparage all of the candidates except for Rauner, and we're not quite sure who's funding that effort.
Well, it occurs to me, if you're running a campaign, the first thing you got to do is you got to try and knock down the front runner. Bruce Rauner has been on the airwaves ad nauseum, seems like forever. And he's been unchallenged. And so a lot of people, oh, yeah, he's the guy who has the cheap watch and the Carhartt jacket, and he's going to hammer Springfield or shake him up or do something. Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. And that story has gone unchallenged. Does Bruce Rauner have a laid-out plan for the state's finances? Does he have stances on a lot of issues? He seems to be pretty wishy-washy. And reporters have had a hard time pinning him down. So there may be a lot of people who superficially think, oh, yeah, I like this guy. So what you have to do is go after that soft vote, as Bill indicated, and get those people thinking, now, wait a second. Maybe this guy, maybe there's more to him than this TV commercial. Maybe he's not really what he seems. And I'm not sure I want him. Now, who will be my second choice or who will I go to instead? But I think the first thing you got to do is shake up the guy, to use the terminology, who's in front, and get his squishy support to start thinking we need somebody else.
The candidates are set to meet at least once in the coming week. Are all candidates set to attend that event? Do you know?
There's a debate in Springfield on Tuesday, and all of the candidates are expected to be in attendance.
And then looking ahead to next week, we'll hopefully have more answers and be able to shed some light. Is the legislature in next week, or are they off next week still?
The legislature did have a very light January, so they weren't here much, but February is bigger. They had a break off this past week, but they will be in the next 2 weeks and a little bit in March leading up to the election. They've definitely been trying to hit the campaign trail versus spending time in the Capitol.
And then in late February and in March, there are three Chicago area televised debates where those are really important to the guys who haven't been on TV as much. So February 27th and then two in March, those will be, I think, you know, climaxes of this whole thing.
And the outside money could play a factor, could it not, Brian Mackey?
It could, and it's interesting because, like Amanda pointed out, you've had this one ad running against Rutherford, Brady, and Dillard, but not Rauner, and it's just funded by this mysterious group called the Mid-America Fund. There appears to be a group with that name incorporated in Ohio, who is incorporated by a woman who happens to work at a community college, and it's very little that I can't find any record of them on the Ohio election authorities or Illinois election authorities. This is the brave new world of mysterious campaign money where it's very difficult to trace where it's coming from, and it gives Rauner the ability to go and say, I don't know where that – I have nothing to do with that, but it certainly raises questions why an ad would target everyone but him.
And that is all the time we have for this week's discussion on State Week. And hopefully we'll have more answers and probably even more questions next week. Thanks to our guest, Mike Riopel of the Daily Herald. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.